Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This episode is marked for sensitive content. Please check content warnings in the episode description before listening. This week on The Breakup Breakdown.
And when I started coming back to the apartment, I started finding things that he would leave for me around the house. The most dramatic one was a note that he had written on a paper and in his own blood. And he had just wrote his name, and then it said, "Blank is crazy, love you." You don't do something that extreme without recognizing how crazy it seems.
This is the kind of thing you would hear on a normal true crime podcast and not a relationships one. Hey, it's Abby from The Breakup Breakdown. Thanks for tuning in. There are few things that leave a mark as impressionable as a bad breakup. Whether it's the guy you dated for 3 months or 3 years, when it comes to heartbreak, it's not easily forgotten. And this is the podcast that gets to the bottom of the breakups you want to know more about. Maybe you're just in a really nosy mood and you got kind of curious about that girl you went to high school with who broke up her marriage out of nowhere, and you were always wanting to ask her about it, but of course you weren't going to because you haven't spoken in like 10 years. You're like, who can I ask to get these details? Well, hi, you can ask me to ask them. If you head down to the episode description, there's a submission form where you can submit stuff like that, whether it's just like a tip where you're like, hey, can you DM this girl that I went to high school with? Or if you want to come on and tell your own story, or if you saw something on TikTok that you're really curious about, I accept pretty much all those kinds of tips. Again, head down to the episode description, you'll find a submission form link there. And as always, if you want to jump to a certain part of the interview, you can find timestamps in the episode description. Hey, Heartbreakers, welcome back to another episode of The Breakup Breakdown. Thanks for tuning in. So this week, we have a submission where someone says they've still got feelings for their ex who's currently serving time in jail. But before we get into that, every week we give a shout out to a different domestic violence shelter throughout the country just to raise more awareness. And this week, we're shouting out Mosaic Family Services in Dallas, Texas. They are dedicated to serving survivors of human rights abuses all around the world and within the Dallas community. So to find out on how you can help them out, you can find those details in the episode description. One more thing until I get into this week's submission. If you haven't heard yet, the Breakup Breakdown podcast is having another live event in Atlanta/Alpharetta, Georgia. I say slash because if you live in Atlanta, you know Alpharetta is like a suburb outside of Atlanta. Anyway, it's happening at the Painted Horse Winery, which I'm really excited about because it's one of my favorite places in Atlanta. I'm a big wine drinker, so I always loved places that obviously specialize in wine, but it's also really cute. Like 90% of my experience with drinking wine has to do with three things. A, the people I'm surrounded by, which if you come to the live, you're going to be surrounded by other heartbreakers who are obviously super fun and nosy. The second is I need a good wine glass, which can confirm. Painted Horse Winery has great wine glasses. Can't be having none of those chunky things that you get at like a pub. And the third is that you gotta have a good atmosphere. And the Painted Horse Winery is so cute. It's on a farm. On like a nice day where it's sunny out, there's just no better place in Atlanta. And trust me, after a couple of glasses of wine, you're probably gonna end up like me and end up like in the chicken coop talking to the little chickens that they've got running around because it's also a farm. But if you want to come, it's gonna be super fun. Tickets are only $20, so you can bring a nice little picnic blanket, bring a friend, and relax. And it's going to be amazing. So once again, you can find those tickets in the episode description. Okay, so into the submission. So I was having a conversation with somebody that I see on a somewhat frequent basis. I won't say where because I don't want to get into any kind of information that might reveal identities, but I was talking to this person and they had mentioned that their sibling was really going through it right now. And it all had to do with the relationship that they'd had a year or two prior. And it was this really long drawn out breakup. And their sister was struggling because she had a lot of feelings for this person, but the ex was honestly just exhibiting like really concerning behavior. And what they told me and what had got me as you can tell by the title of this episode and by the teaser of this episode, is that during the breakup, at one point, he had written her letter in his own blood. And then she was like, and by the way, he's in jail now. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm not totally shocked by that information once you told me the whole letter in blood thing. But she said, you know, my sister's really going through it and it's been a really tough situation for her to work through personally, but it's also just a really sad situation. So I guess the way he ended up in jail was from some kind of car accident situation. And I don't know the details because obviously it was a pretty short conversation before I was like, get your sister on the phone with me now so she can come in and talk about what she's going through. But I guess in some way he was kind of at fault and somebody passed away in the accident and that's why he's serving time. But what really got me was they said, you know, my sister kind of blames herself for everything that happened. And obviously by this point, I'm already invested and now I want to know, how can you blame yourself for somebody's actions? And after what seems like a very traumatic breakup, how can you still harbor feelings for somebody that to the outside world doesn't seem like a really great match, which is kind of the great mystery of love and how it can blind you in certain ways. So of course I was very eager to chat with this person. So let's find out what happened when we break down this week's breakup.
We met between the summer of 8th grade and 9th grade at band camp. I know it's cliche. What happens there stays there, but we met at band camp and it was a very dramatic passion that we both had for music that we shared. There was a friend group, about 6 to 8 of us that hung out all the time, and he was a part of that. And so through all of us being together, you know, almost every day of the summer, because band camp is 9 to 9s, 9 to 5s. You spend your entire summer with these people. So through all of that, we just became really close. And so by the time our freshman year started, we were pretty much dating. He was my best friend. And he made me laugh more than anybody else ever could have. There was this bond between us that I felt like he knew me better than anybody else, and he wanted to be better for me. And when you're 15, that is everything that you want to hear.
When you say he wanted to be better for you, what does that mean?
He came from a family that wasn't overly involved in his life, and he acted out a lot in middle school. He was not my usual type. I'm a very go by the rules kind of person. So it was like he decided that he would take the straight path because I was not going to show interest in somebody who continued to be dumb and immature and those kinds of things, even though we all are at that age. And so it was like he decided that because I had these standards of what I wanted in a boyfriend, it was his mission to meet those moving forward.
Did he?
To some extent. For a while, I think he did. And I think I fell for it. Not to say that it was faked, but just that it was almost a facade.
So he's doing one thing to your face, but other things behind your back?
Yeah. I found out from a lot of people in our high school that he had drug problems and anger issues. And, you know, just the way that he would behave around other people was not synonymous with the way that he would act around me.
So how long were you guys together total? And then at what point did you realize that this relationship was probably going to come to an end? Like, when did the issue start?
Okay, so we were together on and off all 4 years of high school, and then another year after we graduated. So about 5 years total. The point in which I realized that I didn't think it was going to work out was probably when he showed up to my friend's house in the middle of the night to come and get me after I had ignored his calls and his text. And he said he wasn't going to leave without me. And I ended up having to call the cops on him.
So you had broken up with him before this?
Loosely, yes.
And why had you made that decision?
Because he was turning into somebody that I didn't recognize anymore. The anger issues and the temperament and the trauma of a recent car accident had almost broken him to a point where he just lost who he was. And all of those feelings and all of that anger that he had towards the situation was taken out on me. I was the only person in his vicinity that could take it because we had pretty much isolated ourselves from our parents and our friends by that point.
So what had happened during the car accident that was so traumatic for him?
He was coming home from work and it was raining, and he hit a puddle and he did a 180 into the other lane. The accident itself was brutal. His car was absolutely totaled. He didn't sustain super serious injuries, but the other person in the accident did pass away afterwards.
And so he had survivor's guilt, or it was so traumatic because he almost lost his life as well. How was he dealing with the aftermath of that event?
I do think it was more survivor's guilt than anything, but I don't think he recognized that.
So how did that show up in him?
It was very manic, is a broad term to use. Like, I would come home and our space would be completely cluttered and stuff would be thrown. And it was this idea that if he could fix something in his vicinity or control his environment around him, that it would make him feel better. I think he recognized the complete out of control feeling that he had after the accident and everything that was happening afterwards, that it had to be somewhere in his life that he felt he had control. And that just happened to be our relationship at the time. And it did come off as aggressive sometimes, but it also came off as extremely sad, because like, I would come home and he would just be in a corner sobbing just uncontrollably. And it was extremely hard for him to communicate those feelings because I don't even think he recognized what they were.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I'm sure it must have been hard for you as his girlfriend to see him go through that.
Oh, extremely. I wanted to be the one person that could get him through it. You know, everybody thinks that their spouse or their partner is their person, and that person should know you better than anybody else, and they should know how to help you through these things. And at 19 years old, I had no idea. I didn't have the resources to help him, and I didn't have the knowledge to understand what he was going through. I did reach out to his family, his friends. I tried to explain the severity of the situation to them, but they weren't super receptive of it, and nothing really changed regardless of my effort.
And that's when you came to the decision that you needed to break up with him.
Yeah, At that point I had to put my safety first. It was an incredibly hard thing to do because I cared so much about him and about what he was going through, but I had to recognize my limits, and recognizing that I could not be the person to help him through this was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do, because then it felt like I was abandoning him through it. And that's the one thing that you don't want from your partner. So it was extremely difficult, and I still kind of hold that against myself because I just question what kind of person he could be today if he did have somebody continuously in his corner, and I didn't leave him to deal with it on his own. But at the same time, I can't feel guilt for having to put myself first and having to take myself out of a situation that I felt was turning increasingly dangerous and unpredictable.
When you say unsafe, what do you mean by that?
So his behavior became increasingly unpredictable and erratic. More oftentimes than not, it was channeled into anger. There was a point in time where after we broke up, we were still living in the same apartment, and neither one of us wanted to walk out on our lease. It was our first apartment. It was our first thing we did as adults. And, you know, we didn't want to damage a credit score or anything like that. And so we decided that we would cohabitate. And I tried to lay boundaries in that moment of, you know, if we're going to be in the same place and we're going to live together, there needs to be boundaries because we are no longer romantically involved. Mm. They included, you know, there were two separate bedrooms in the apartment. So I sleep in one, you sleep in one. It was very simple. And then, you know, I would go to bed at night alone and I would wake up with him in my bed. Mm. And it was terrifying, you know, for that split second when you wake up and expect to be alone and you're not. It's terrifying. Even though it was somebody I knew, even though it was somebody that I loved deeply, it was a complete invasion of my privacy and of the boundaries that I had tried to set. And so I decided that I was going to spend most of my time outside of the apartment and try to live elsewhere and just get through the rest of my lease. And so I would come back to the apartment as little as I could just to switch out clothes or grab something that I needed. And when I started coming back to the apartment, I started finding things that he would leave for me around the house. The most dramatic one was a note that he had written on a paper and in his own blood.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So you come home to your apartment and where is this note? Is it like wrapped up in a little envelope? Is it plastered on the wall? Like murder mystery style?
It is on the counter next to the sink, along with the knife that...
Oh my God, oh my God.
...was next to the note with blood on it as well. It was a piece of paper that he had received in the mail, and he had just wrote his name, and then it said, you know, blank is crazy, love you.
Blank being his name?
Yes. It almost, as much as it terrified me, it almost felt like progression, because you don't do something that extreme without recognizing how crazy it seems.
Well, he literally wrote it in blood that he knew that was a crazy thing to do.
Yes. It was me constantly trying to find the silver lining in my fear.
You must really love that man.
I do, with my whole heart. I still do.
After something that objectively, as we just noted, is pretty outlandish.
Yes.
How do you still have love for this person?
Because I choose to recognize that most of what happened and most of the actions he took resulted just from pain and confusion. I think that there was a really lost boy somewhere in there who was screaming for help, but the only behavior that he knew and was comfortable with was aggression and violence. And so I tried so hard to see past what he wanted me to see and the facade that he was putting on. And I tried to love him through it. Obviously I did have to leave at some point, and that was a good decision for me to make. I don't regret that.
Did you feel like your life was in danger at any point during the relationship, or even when you had kind of loosely broken up?
We had went on a spring break trip. It was a group of us from our school, my senior year. The boys and the girls had separated at night. The girls had decided we were going to go to the ocean, which was literally feet from our hotel. And we were going to put on some music and we were going to put our feet in the water and we were going to relax without the boys, because boys. The boys had smoked some pot and they decided they were hungry, so they were going to go to the Waffle House. When the boys came back to the hotel and we weren't there, they were immediately angry that nobody had told them where we were going. You know, we were a few feet from the hotel. We were on the beach, but it was dark. They couldn't see it. And nobody had just said, hey, you know, we're going to walk down to the beach real quick, which in hindsight would have been a very simple thing for us to do. But we just wanted a moment to ourselves to dance and sing and do whatever without the boys. They eventually come down to the beach and they see where we are and everything. This was probably the highlight of my spring break trip, was just this 20 minutes of freedom and no worry and just feet in the water. And it was a beautiful feeling. So when my partner approached me extremely angry that we had not told them where we were going, I was smiling. I was happy. I was giggling. I was trying to make the situation feel a little more lighthearted. His response to that was to put his hand around my throat and shut me up, because I wasn't listening to what he was saying. At least he felt like I wasn't. I wasn't understanding the severity of why it was such a big deal that I didn't tell him we were going 10 feet down to the beach. It wasn't to the point where I couldn't breathe, but it was enough to make a statement. As soon as I make eye contact with him, he just drops to the floor in the sand and is immediately so apologetic and so sorry that it was like 30 seconds of so many emotions for both of us. And it was the one and only time that he ever actually, in a violent way, put his hands on me. I took a minute and we went and sat on a bench at the beach. And I told him that I felt so sorry for him. And I told him that I could not imagine fighting the kind of demons that he was fighting. This was before his accident. This was just recognizing that he had anger issues and recognizing that he had substance abuse issues. And this was one of those things where I felt like I could help him through it. And this was kind of the extreme point and the worst that it got. And he was so confused. You know, it was an immediate, you're not mad at me. You're not going to break up with me. And my gut reaction is no, absolutely not. What I'm going to do is help you through this. I'm going to help you learn to control that anger. And I'm going to help you learn how not to do this again in the future. I will never regret having that reaction because he never did it again, at least in a violent way. And it's, you know, it's not like he was like, hey, it's not that big of a deal. He was distraught at what he had just done. So it was like seeing two completely different people in front of me in a span of 30 seconds. And all I wanted to do was help. And I don't know if I ultimately did. After we had broken up and we were still living together, it was sexual. It was me waking up in my bed with him there, but waking up because he was trying to initiate things. Mm. It was him choosing to do private things in public spaces in our apartment and that kind of invasion of privacy. It was the concept that he was, I say, abusing my sanity without even laying a finger on me. It was extremely complex and complicated, and I still have a very hard time acknowledging and naming what I went through because I just see the person that I love and not the person that he became.
It almost feels like it's a form of emotional abuse or emotional manipulation to, and not even emotional, because if you're waking up to him like groping you or whatever was going on in that moment, I mean, that's also a physical type of abuse in a way.
Yes. And it took me a very long time to come to terms with that. It took months of therapy before I could even say those words, like sexual abuse. And part of me thinks that he had just manipulated me that much that I couldn't even consider seeing him as the type of guy who would sexually abuse me. And part of me still thinks to this day that he's not that type of guy. It's a constant battle that I go through in terms of how I choose to see him and how I choose to talk about him. So this is so hard because I don't want to disrespect him in any way, shape, or form. And I don't want to make him out to be somebody that I don't believe he is. But just because the image I have in my mind of him is somebody that I love, you know, doesn't mean that he didn't do these things to me. And it doesn't make the reality any less real of what I went through. Mm. So it's something that I still definitely struggle with in terms of how I choose to describe what I went through and the language that I use. I will say that studying psychology has given me some kind of insight into his actions and his behavior. But I also think that his lived experience of having survivor's guilt is something that I can read about all day long and I can study, but I will never understand how it feels. You know, I can put myself in his shoes and I can empathize, but for somebody who went through something traumatic that also had underlying anger issues and substance abuse, all of those things are going to mix to create a unique response from him. And so I don't think it's fair to read, you know, what a quote unquote normal person experiences with survivor's guilt, because I don't think he was on that path. And I think there were much more complexities to why he acted the way that he acted.
Did your experience with your now ex-boyfriend influence you to go down the path of learning about mental health?
Absolutely. If you had asked me then, I would have said, no, of course not. Like, it's just something I'm passionate about. But hindsight, definitely. I had this idea that if I could understand why he did the things that he did and why he acted the way that he did, it would be easier to forgive him. That kind of shook a few people in my life, because so many people were angry with him and they expected me to be too. They expected me to, you know, say I'm worth more than this and I deserve more than this. And I did all of that the minute that I left him. But my ultimate goal is never to hate anybody, and it's never to talk down on him. My goal is to forgive him and to allow him to forgive himself. And I'm not sure either one of those have happened yet.
What do you think it'll take for you to finally forgive him?
Wow. I think it's going to take a lot of introspective analyzing on my part. I don't think I can do anything else to try to understand more about him. I think I have done everything that I can to understand why he did what he did and how, why he acted. Will I ever have a full understanding of that? Absolutely not. But I don't think there's any more progress to be made in terms of putting myself in his shoes. I think the huge part of me forgiving him is me forgiving myself, because there were so many instances in which I didn't realize the severity of the situation, and I didn't realize how much pain was underneath the anger. And part of me, of course, thinks that I should have. You know, part of me is like, I'm literally a mental health student studying these things, and I should be able to recognize the signs. And will I ever forgive myself for that? I'm not sure. But I do think that the minute I stop feeling guilt about walking away from him is the minute that I can truly forgive him.
How do you think that guilt will go away?
I'm not sure. I've taken the therapy route, and I have talked it to death, like to death. And I have journaled, and I have written him letters, and I have tried to be so raw with my emotions, with myself. I just think that when I realize, or when I see him doing well, once he's past this part of his life, I can begin to feel better. Part of me does feel like I took this chapter of his life and I was responsible for ruining it. And I know that makes no sense, because I wasn't the one driving and I wasn't the one who was leaving these crazy notes, but I was the one who walked away from him and all of that when he needed somebody the most. Once again, I don't regret that, and I don't think I ever will, but it is excruciatingly painful to feel like I abandoned the person that I have loved the most in my entire life.
And I know it's probably especially difficult, because at this point in time, there's really no way for him to be able to move on and grow in a life sense, because I know he's currently serving time for the vehicular manslaughter.
He is, yes. I texted him on a phone that he doesn't even have and just told him that I hoped that the jail did some kind of turkey legs for Thanksgiving. And it's so minuscule and it's silly, but the idea that the one thing he could have looked forward to was maybe a Thanksgiving dinner in jail makes me feel so awful for him. And I sympathize with this situation. Do I believe that he should receive consequences from the accident? Absolutely. A life was lost, and that is devastating and that is intense. But do I believe that he had any intention of hurting anybody? No. So it's hard to see consequences given to him that limit his potential of a person that I know he can be. And I just want to see him grow and flourish. And I just want to know that this part of his life doesn't dictate the rest. And I'm a huge part of why everything came tumbling down at once and why he turned into somebody that nobody recognized. So, of course, I feel partially responsible for that, but I can't say that I would change my decision.
In your mind, even though this isn't true, in your mind, you thought, if I hadn't broken up with him, he would have never gotten into that accident and therefore wouldn't be in jail and therefore wouldn't be stifling his potential.
Well, we were together when he got into the accident.
Gotcha. Okay.
I didn't break up with him until he started really barreling towards that aggressive behavior as a result of the survivor's guilt and the feelings that he didn't know how to handle.
So you hold his mental health in your hands, essentially.
Yes. Because like I said, his parents weren't overly involved. He isolated himself from all of his friends. You know, he did that one thing that you really should never do in a relationship, which is make your partner your whole world. And when I decided that my world for my safety could not include him anymore, everything he had ever known came crashing down.
Mm.
And it was on top of all of the guilt that he was already feeling and all of the anger that he was already feeling towards the world.
Do you, on some conscious level, know that it was on him? It's his personal responsibility to take care of himself? Or is there a part of you that still feels like because he created you to be his entire world, you should have known that and in some way taken it on?
I think the answer that I give you now and the answer that I would have given you at 19 would be completely different. You know, back then it was acts of service were my love language and physical touch was my love language. And I had this precious, precious human that I called mine who needed my help. And there's almost a sense of pride in me being the one that he comes to. And I talked about that in therapy, this feeling that I have to be regarded as a good friend, a good partner, a reliable person, and why I feel the need to be reliable and be seen as that way through the people in my life. But I think he brought that out in me to the extreme where the lines between am I your partner or am I your caregiver started to blend, especially after the accident when he was in the hospital for a while and I was there as much as I could have been. And as soon as he was out, I was taking care of him. I was reminding him of his appointments. I was playing so many roles at once that I basically gave him the means to make me his entire world.
So when you blame yourself for enabling it to a certain extent.
Yes. My mom always told me, you know, you should never need to depend on a man and you should never give up your independence for somebody. But we never talked about what to do if somebody else did that for me.
That's really interesting. We talk about that a lot, especially as women in careers, like girl boss, don't rely on a man for anything. But if somebody then puts you in that box, if they don't have those same skills, they almost corner you into becoming the kind of stability that they need. And how do you wean somebody off of a drug that you didn't consent to give?
And that's exactly what it felt like. It was a territory that I had never even considered would happen because I had such a mindset of I'm never going to, you know, make somebody my entire world. I know better than that. I know that it's so healthy to have other people in your life. And I continue to do so. I had friends that I stayed in contact with. I stayed in contact with my parents. I visited people regularly.
Mm.
And I stressed how important that was for me. But I never looked at him and said, you know, that should be important for you too. And it was a situation that I didn't know how to handle. I don't even know that I would have known how to handle it now. And I feel more grown now than I have in a long time. It's this idea of codependency, but one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you, in a healthy manner, detach yourself from that? Especially with somebody who was going through so much. It's like he needed the most out of me that he had ever needed before. And that was when I realized I needed to step back.
Mm. A lot of times I compare a relationship that becomes too codependent. It's kind of like a drug. Like mm-hmm. that person gives you that hit of dopamine and serotonin. And let's say you envision yourself as that drug that this person's abusing and becoming dependent on. In any other situation, we would say, we need to wean this person off. We need to get this drug out of their life. We need to get them into a rehab facility. So in a way, you can look back and realize that you really did the right thing because in any other circumstance, if we're going to compare the two things, that would be the right thing.
And I thought so too, but it almost felt like the attempt to quote unquote wean him off was unsuccessful because I was creating all of these boundaries while still maintaining a close position to him that he was continuously disrespecting. And so it's like, you know, I recognize how unhealthy these behaviors are and I'm trying to set boundaries to correct them without completely abandoning you, you know, because at the end of the day, he was my best friend and I wanted him to continue being my best friend, but he couldn't separate the two. And I don't know if that was wrong of me to expect him to, you know, a lot of times after breakups, at least in my experience, you take time apart before you even consider keeping each other in your lives. And there was no adjustment period. There was, hey, we're together. Hey, you're kind of scaring me. And I don't think a relationship is what's best for us right now. And then going to sleep in the next room. So it was, in my mind, a way of trying to set a new normal where he didn't have to rely on me so much. And in his mind, it was, she's literally right there. Why can't I? Mm-hmm. Because she's not going anywhere.
And he can't really see the fact of why it's becoming so dangerous. Because I'm sure he doesn't look in the mirror and go, I'm a dangerous person. I'm a crazy person, until he brought the knife out. And it was probably harder for him to make that distinction because of that. Like, I don't understand why we have to be apart. You know, she sees one thing, but I don't see that in me.
Yeah. And trying to convince somebody to see a different perspective when they don't want to is almost impossible. It's almost impossible, to the point where I just had to cold cut anything that was happening between us. And that's when that behavior really became frightening. The few interactions that we did have together after I moved out were probably the most intense interactions that we've ever had. He wasn't in the apartment building, but when I come home to notes that say, you know, I'm crazy, but I love you. When I come home to roses on the counter, even one time he left me $200 in cash and a Subway chocolate chip cookie.
Oh, that would have won me over.
Oh, I ate the cookie.
I love Subway chocolate chip cookies.
You know, but I come home to that and it's almost like, are you trying to guilt me into staying?
You maybe thought he was trying to woo you back. He thought, if I'm just nice enough to her, she'll come crawling back. It's just, this is what you're missing.
But at the same time, he was recognizing how crazy his behavior was.
And was there nobody, and it's just so much easier said than done, especially at 19 when, you know, you've got no money. But was there anybody pushing him to go see a therapist?
Other than me, no. No, like I said, he had basically cut off everything else in his world other than me. Even when it came to him keeping a job, it was a few months at a time before he would try to find something else. Or, you know, he would mess up to the point where they would fire him. And I say mess up, I mean leave his job to come find me in the middle of the night because I wasn't answering my text. Because I tried to create that separation between us and he could not understand why. Mm. It was that moment of, you're at a house that's not even mine. It was my friend's house. In the middle of the night, I have 63 missed calls from you. And you're telling me that you hope I call the cops on you and you hope that they shoot you dead. It was that moment of, you are really not well. And I sat in the driveway and I just sobbed. I just cried. And I talked to my therapist about it, that I almost wish I could have shown him me being aggressive. I almost wish that when he put his hands on my shoulders, that I would have pushed him off. That I would have given him some kind of reaction other than sobbing. And of course, I can't be mad at that, that's the reaction that I had. I was terrified. I was terrified for me. I was terrified for him. I was terrified for the cops that were going to show up. And all I could do was cry, because at that point in time, I was losing him as a person. I was losing every sense of safety that I thought I had. I was losing my friend. My friend was like, this is insane. You know, why is he still in your life? And then it became a judgment party of everybody else around me seeing all of these things that he's doing and judging me for continuing to try to be by his side. So I just cried.
And I don't think you should blame yourself for that. A thing a therapist told me is that we should ourselves a lot. I should have done that. And we can with hindsight, right? Like, it's easy for your friends on the outside to observe what's going on and be like, well, you should do that. But they also don't have the internal struggle, which it sounds like both he and you had a hard time separating what was going on. I have this boyfriend or this now ex-boyfriend that's doing all these crazy things, but I also love this person. And it's so difficult when you are the person that is experiencing that love and that care for that person to fully take on what's actually happening and just make that your new reality, because your reality is also that you really care for this person and that you know how good of a person this is. And I don't think you should blame yourself for that. You just met me, so I'm not gonna be like, okay, you're cured now. Yay, no more therapy. I think it's important for you to hear that.
Yeah.
That I think you're blaming yourself for somebody who is clearly very sick, who didn't have the capabilities or personal responsibility in the moment to get help. You can, again, lead a horse to water. You can't make him drink. And unfortunately, I think sometimes people need to hit rock bottom to shake themselves into the person that they can be, which is, it sounds like you really want him to become.
I do. I really do. I wish nothing but the best for him. And I don't know. I've considered whether or not he has any kind of place in my life when he's done serving time, because I do feel as though I have this tether to him, and I always will, but I can't risk giving him the sense that I'm back and that I'm not going anywhere. And that's really hard for me because he was my first love. And of course that's intense. And of course that's heartbreaking for everybody who goes through it. But he was my first love. He was my best friend. He was my secret fiance for a month and a half.
Let's not bury the lead. When did he propose to you?
So we graduated in high school in May of 2021. And then we moved in together in August. And he proposed about a week before we moved in together.
With a ring, or just kind of like, we should get married?
Oh, it was with a ring and everything. He had written out a note, and it was extremely sweet.
In blood?
No. It was extremely sweet and heartfelt. And I read it aloud. And when I looked up, he was on his knee. And it was everything that me at 19 could have hoped for. Because like I said, there was nobody in my mind that could have convinced us that we were not meant to be together. And then September is really when things started feeling off with him and feeling like, I kind of don't recognize the things you're doing and the decisions you're making. Like, maybe we should talk about that.
And this is after the accident or before?
This is after. So the accident was in June.
If he's everything you're looking for in August, what do you think the change was in September?
I actually think it was me putting my foot down in terms of, hey, like, I'm not willing to ignore this anymore.
So the behavior had been happening since the accident, but you called it out.
Yes.
Okay. For those listening who are experiencing this in a relationship, how can you encourage them to separate the actions that are happening in your relationship and also that love that you feel for them so that they can have the strength to get out? Because even though it doesn't feel like it, I do believe you did the right thing. So what would you say to that person?
It took me genuinely fearing my safety and his for his continued pattern of hurting himself. It took that much of extreme behavior for me to take a step back and realize that maybe I'm not safe where I'm at. What I would say, honestly, is that if you have an overwhelming amount of people in your life who feel like something is wrong, they're probably right. And that's so hard to hear because nobody could have changed my mind. But when you reach out to your friends and you're only telling them he did this, he did that, and they're not seeing any good or healthy parts of the relationship, of course they're going to start assuming, you know, hey, I don't know that this is a good place for you to be. And you're going to go, well, you don't know my relationship and you don't know all the good things. So if you don't have the desire to tell your friends about the good things, about the happy things, you need to question why. If you only reach out to say, can you believe he did this? You need to question why. And if you're having conversations about what he did with anybody but your partner, you need to question why. Because I was scared of what his response was going to be. I didn't know if it was going to be aggressive. I didn't know if it was going to be manipulative. I didn't know if he was just going to cry until I felt like the worst person on the planet. All I knew is that the conversation was not going to be productive because I didn't feel like I was being listened to and he didn't feel like he was being listened to. So I think there's just this level of, as much as you want to call and gossip about, oh my God, he did this, he did this, you should want to tell, he took me on a date. It went so well. He or she opened my door. He or she decided to surprise me. You should want to tell those things just as much, if not more. And if those things are not happening and you don't have those stories to tell, it's concerning.
So now that you're in the aftermath of this, I know it's been going on for a while, but this breakup.
Yes.
And I know he recently went to jail for the vehicular manslaughter, which I'm sure dug up a lot of wounds. how have you been taking care of yourself during this? Because I think it's a very, it's an extreme version of a thing that a lot of people go through, is still having love for somebody, but knowing it's not right to be with them. So how have you been healing from this all during it?
So there's a few things, and it's going to be quite raw and vulnerable for me to talk about these things. But one of the biggest things that I decided to do was get on antidepressants. And I don't believe that I'm going to need them forever. But I believe that so much of what I went through and so much of what he went through puts me in a place where I'm hesitant for physical touch. And I'm in this place of feeling so numb for so long that I decided that I was going to start taking medication and just see how I felt, because I had been doing therapy for so long. And don't get me wrong, it helps, but I feel like there's only so many ways I can say I don't feel anything anymore. And the medication has helped tremendously. I went to the dentist yesterday, and that's huge for me. I haven't stopped to take care of myself and my health in 5 years. And so it was the desire to actually take care of myself again. And I write a lot of letters to him. I have a specific notebook for it. When I feel like I have something I need to express to him, I write him a letter. Do they ever leave my notebook? Absolutely not. Will they ever? Absolutely not. But so much of our communication failed that if I feel like I can get it right, it helps. It helps a lot. And there's nobody there that I know is going to judge me for what I'm saying. And there's nobody else who's going to read it. And I can truly, genuinely be honest with myself. Other than that, I have had the best support system with my sister. And I won't ever take that for granted, because I know a lot of people don't have that. But I encourage silence. As terrifying and as awful as it is for somebody who may be going through anything similar, because at this point you're used to chaos and you're used to, you know, confusion. I think silence has been the most terrifying and comforting thing that I can do.
On Thursday, we'll have a breakdown bonus episode for you where we talk about the really difficult position you're put in if somebody's becoming a little bit too reliant on you, because that's a tricky thing. I mean, we just heard it. If you love somebody, you want them to want to be in a relationship with you, but at what point does it become too toxic? Also, don't forget, you can get your Breakup Breakdown podcast live event tickets in the episode description.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2 hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.